Derry, who is the director of Lemon Street Gallery, with me today. We're going to find out more about Lemon Street and what the gallery is all about. We're going to talk with three artists to find out about the creative process. And I think a lot of people come in, I like those colors. I can be guilty of that too. But we're going to find out what it really takes to create. So first, let's start with you, Beth. And Lemon Street Gallery's been here for how long?
Well, first of all, thank you very much, Jane, for having me. Yes, Lemon Street Gallery has been located at 4601 Sheridan Road since 1999. So we're going into our 22nd year.
That's fabulous. And I know you've been celebrating anniversaries along, and it's just amazing, too, what you've done for the neighborhood. We're going to take a little walk around to see the types of art that you have, but why don't you tell me a little bit about the concept of the gallery?
Sure. So Lemon Street Gallery is a nonprofit artist collective. We have a great venue in which our artist members can exhibit and sell their work. We also offer really good community art classes that are affordable, and we partner with different business organizations to do their arts programming. We're a strong advocate for the arts in Wisconsin and funding for those programs and our like communities.
So a cooperative gallery, how is that different from perhaps a commercial gallery?
Sure. So a commercial gallery is, if you want to think about kind of a consignment arrangement, where they consign with different artists to have the work exhibited. Lemon Street Gallery is a nonprofit collective, so we are a membership-based organization. So all of our artist members who are here and exhibiting their work are members. So they pay annual dues to us to have their work exhibited.
So we're going to start taking a walk around, and then we're going to start with our first artist in a little bit. But as we're making our way over to Rebecca and her encaustic works, why don't you point out a few things at the gallery so we have an understanding of, are you just painting? Are you 3D?
Right. So we represent probably about 75 different artists, and we have everything from paintings and mixed media and sculptural work. We have ceramics and pottery. We have fiber art that we have also exhibiting here. And we have...
Let's walk this way.
Sure. We have everything from jewelry to pottery to paintings to sculpture to everything in between. This is
one of the things that you mentioned to me the other day is that all of a sudden you have a lot of abstract art, and then maybe some other time you have much more formal. Is that common that you have that that type of mix?
Well, what we do here is we change all the artwork out 4 times a year, which is very unusual or not necessarily common in a gallery. And all of the artwork comes down, and our member artists bring new artwork in. And it's always kind of interesting to see what they'll be bringing in. And with this last changeover that we did, yes, we had this, it seemed as though there was a heavy concentration of abstract art and a heavy concentration of paintings or artwork that incorporated animals. And so that was just kind of a surprise.
Well, as we make our way over to Rebecca, we'll see the animal room.
Yes, we will. This is our abstract wall, and we have abstract ceramics and pottery here. And as you can see, we are working our way into the middle gallery. So we have the 3 different gallery spaces, and this is the introduction, I would say, to our middle gallery, which hosts this time our animals.
And everything is so so colorful and bright, and we love seeing that. And just briefly, I'll mention animals. We have dog paintings of dogs, horses. I'm going to say an orangutan, a bear. I have a feeling that the artist would correct me on my animal picking, but whatever. I'm sorry, but it's gorgeous, really detailed work. So now I'm going to have Rebecca Powers come forward. Hi, Rebecca.
Hello, Jane. How are you?
Oh, nice to meet you.
Very nice to meet you.
I've been seeing your work, and I know you're considered a photographer and encaustic painter. Is that the proper term?
Yes, yes.
And I really wanted you here on the program because a lot of people don't understand what encaustic is. So let's concentrate on that first of all. What's the process? And let's take a look at some of your gorgeous work. But I think if I were allowed to like touch it and move my hand over it, it would feel... what's the best word? It has a texture. It's not like touching paint.
Yes, yeah, it is firm, but it, I'm sure many of your audience will be familiar with beeswax, and beeswax is one of the parts of the encaustic medium, and the other part is a tree resin, Damar tree resin, a particular type of tree resin. So that Damar resin gives the medium a little bit more hardness than beeswax would alone. And you can see on this piece here,
which is a lovely flower and a very close-up of a flower.
Yes, this is Prairie Trillium, and this is an unfinished piece, so I thought I'd show an unfinished piece. I don't know if you're catching that in the camera, but you can see there's some shine and some texture to the medium, which is, and of course, a bit of depth that comes with the medium, which I just love as in combination with the photography.
And next to it, you have the same image, but it's not finished the same way.
Yes. So part of my process is to make a photograph, and then I'll just show you. Like this is the photograph, the color photograph, right?
Lovely.
And then I will turn that into a black and white image. That black and white image gets fastened to the board, and then I use the encaustic resin or the encaustic medium to coat the piece, and then I will hand paint. So this is my practice run at hand painting here. So then ultimately, you know, this is obviously a different image, but it's a finished work that had the same process as that one would have to be finished.
So let me better understand it. I guess I have two questions zooming around in my mind. So you do the coating, but then you paint afterwards to add color?
Yes. So this is it's called pan pastel. So it's a dry pigment with just a little bit of binder, not a lot, a little bit. And that I use that dry pigment to hand paint on the, and then encaustic means, it means fire or burning, that's part of the root of encaustic. And so what I'm doing is I'm putting the pigment on the medium, and then using a torch to fuse that pigment with the medium.
I had no idea that happened. And why are you doing this? I don't know how to ask that question. Is what? Why did you move from just either simple photography or simple painting to this?
Yeah, yeah. So here's one piece that was a straight photograph here on the left there, and I love the unseen, you know, the qualities of plants that often go unseen, and some of which even look like human hands, you know, in this case, or that's what I see in it anyway. And there's a mystery and a wonder behind that. And you know, Lemon Street Gallery, the spirit behind Lemon Street Gallery is community, and community is behind all of my art. And I think, you know, just like the animals that we were seeing earlier, the plants are an important part of the community here. And I think the encaustic medium gives us that sense of mystery that's really there, but helps, you know, artistically bring that sense of mystery out. And then to highlight some of the qualities of the plants as they stand out from their background.
And it does indeed do that. It looks real. That's probably the best way I can describe it. It looks like it's almost 3D.
We want to bring these plants to life, or whatever that, I don't just do plants, but in this case there's a lot of plants here, but to bring the spirit of that plant to life for people as they come into the gallery.
So let's talk a little bit about your artistic journey. How did you get started as an artist, and what led you to try this really exciting medium?
Yeah, so I've been a photographer for a number of years, and I got into photography because in my day job, there's a lot of words associated with it, and you know, there's lots of ways that we interact with the people around us and the world around us, and I had too many words, right? So photography was a way to interact with the world visually with images. So it was just a restful, creative outlet for me. And then once I discovered encaustic, like I said, I just think there's a magic and a texture just that texture and that three-dimensional, and the fact that it's the beeswax and it's the tree resin really just seemed to fit in with the spirit of my work. So I was ready to move on to something else and to expand, and I just have really fallen in love with it. So yeah.
So the pieces that you have here are flowers, plants. Tell me about the nature theme. Is everything you do of a nature theme?
It's a good question. So I would say everything I do is a human nature relationships theme. And sometimes there are people in the images and sometimes there are not. But really, I want to highlight, like I said, the other beings that we're sharing our space with here, as well as our relationship with those things. So on my last show in the Brick Gallery, I highlighted some rare species that we have in this area, some rare plants on Kenosha Dunes, nice. And then the Chewaukee Prairie, which is just south of us here in Kenosha, and is really a world-class resource right along Lake Michigan, another world-class resource. So just highlighting, we spend a lot of attention, I think, on people, and that's really important. And my niche is maybe to bring some of the other, some of the other species that we're here with into the mix.
You had mentioned your commitment to community. Is that also part of the reason that you decided to become part of Lemon Street Gallery?
Yes, yeah. So, Beth mentioned earlier just being a part of a cooperative endeavor among artists and a gallery that really is community oriented and wants to support local creative work fits, I think, right in with what I love, and the people here have been super supportive, and just being able to also see our work in local homes and local businesses and just to contribute to community in that way, and obviously with the challenges that Kenosha has had recently, and having the artists really show up and provide support and provide some beauty and hope amidst some of those challenges. And it's great to be a part of that.
Well, thanks, Rebecca. And I wish you luck in your continuing artistic journey, and appreciate you talking with us today.
Thank you, Jane. Thank you.
We're going to continue our tour now of Lemon Street Gallery. And maybe you'd like to take a look at a couple of these pieces. We have some really fun, funky pottery. So you can see there's just so much to choose from here. A beautiful wood vase that's been formulated, and I think it's gorgeous. We're going to move on now because we see some pottery. Pottery is a big part of the Lemon Street Gallery. So we're going to be moving, and Julie Schilf is our artist, and she is going to join us in a couple of moments. We're going to find, she's been a member of the gallery for a very long time. In the process, you can see some of the fine works. Hello, Julie. Why don't you stand right here so we can get some of your work right over your shoulder?
We'll be doing both.
We're right here, sure. Yes, we can turn and look at that as well. So Julie is a potter. She has been a potter for countless years. How many?
Well, first of all, very long time in the gallery, countless years as a potter.
Yeah, well, we're young chicks.
I majored in art in college, and I loved it, but after college, and pottery was my favorite class. And after college, of course, I, like everybody else I know, I went to work in industry making a living. And it wasn't until my son left for college that I reentered the art world. And I thought, well, I loved pottery, so I got to do pottery, but I got to do something I wasn't good at, too.
Oh.
And that was drawing. So I took a drawing class and a pottery class at the same time at the Kenosha Public Museum. So that's how I got back in, and that was 25, 30 years ago.
And you've actually turned that around, and you have taught pottery to a lot of people in the community. And I have to admit, I've known Julie for quite a while, and we've been at art fairs together, and I see the troops of her fans coming to visit her and to purchase her work. But I think what I hear most from them is the eclectic nature of the pieces that you do, and a lot of it is hand-built, and your use of glaze. And let's talk about the hand-built and the difference between hand-built and wheel.
Well, all pottery from an artist is hand-built. The hands are involved, but the wheel is the spinning device that you see on television or other places where they raise a pot, beautiful pot, in seconds. And if you're very good at it, that can happen. I was never very good at wheel work, so I really got into the hand building or table work, because you're using a large table and other equipment, and generally slabs of clay, which is my preference. And
Take a look at some of your work.
Most of these pieces are created with slabs of clay. Even though this is circular,
yes,
this was straight slabs of clay at one time, which are curved and then joined. A bottom is put on, and you can create many, many, many different shapes that way.
And I think a lot of people don't understand that when they think of hand-built, they think of something that's very flat. And really, a lot of your work is quite cylindrical that you've done by hand.
Well, and many times I'm combining techniques. In this case, this portion was done on a wheel.
And we're looking at one of your famous teapots.
Well, it's a teapot, but it's part of a series of oil cans. I love the oil can because it's a vessel. And most pottery that's hollow on the inside is a vessel. And so I thought, I'm going to try to recreate that in pottery. And so all of these are based loosely on some real objects that existed in time. But this part of it was done on the wheel. This part was done from a slab that I cut a circle on and fit on top.
So the cylindrical portion was done by a wheel,
right,
and then added to it,
right,
with
And this
built.
Part is done on the wheel, too.
Really, that's the nozzle.
Pulling up a very thin spout. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of it is a combination. This, I love clay because of it. It so wonderfully takes an impression. So I came across some old license plates.
Oh.
And license plates are embossed.
Right.
So I'm rolling the clay with a rolling pin into the embossing of the license plates. And in this case, I just have the numbers. But because it was a license plate, I wanted to give a nod to that. So I made a little car for the top knob.
Very, very cute. Let's go to the other side a little bit here and take a look at a clock that you've built. I know we're giving the camera a little bit of a challenge because, of course, they were pointed one direction and
right.
Now
do
we switched it.
Right, you want me to stand over there?
Yes, why don't you do that? Just take a quick jump and really cool clock.
If you want to hold it up,
you hold your mic.
Okay. I've been making clocks for years because they fascinate me. And it's also something that is fading from fashion with the electronic age. This is going to become an underutilized tool. And I love the clocks because they are old-fashioned and because I get to do what I like doing best, and that's combining odd stuff together. that's the creativity of my work, and it's also why I can't seem to stay in a similar size range. I'm all over the place. This is an old candlestick.
Okay, it's made of wood,
and I love being creative with trying to combine materials, because to combine a flat plate on a round candlestick was the most fun I've had in a long time. And so this is actually a clay piece which is holding the clock in place.
Wow.
And it has to be weighted.
With me.
So clay presents me with continual creative challenges. It's truly one of the more difficult art mediums because there are so many steps involved and there's so much science involved. Every step of the way, the heat up from the kiln and the interaction of earth elements that go into the clay body itself and the various glazes that go on, something can go wrong, and it often does. And so then I love the creativity of trying to make something that didn't work, work. And there's an old Japanese art form called kintsugi, where the Japanese revere the pieces that have broken. They bring the breaks together with gold, real gold, and it's stunning. And I'm now dabbling with that. Yeah.
Oh, mm-hmm. Very cool. Yeah.
Now, I know at one point, and maybe you still are, you've been doing some continuing education, let's say. Tell me about that, and why did you have to learn anything? You've been teaching others and doing it admirably.
Well, thank you very much, Jane. But we all have to keep learning. Technology keeps changing, art forms keep changing, and we can't know everything. So, in the last 10 years or so, I've been doing, well, first of all, to teach other people, I needed to learn how to teach other people. So I audited a class at Carthage, which was geared toward the non-art students, because that's who I was going to be teaching. And thankfully, I saw how they did. I went, oh yeah, I can do that. So, but all of these things, you have to have the confidence to move forward and try something. Education helps so much with that. There are numerous workshops that teach various techniques. When I struggled with throwing, I went to a master potter who lives in Grays Lake, Illinois. He taught classes. That's where I was able to finally get to the point where I felt confident in my throwing that I could teach someone. So, always learning.
And I think one of the things, and it may not involve having to learn anything yourself, I think it comes naturally to you. I have been privileged enough to take some of your classes, and you teach creativity, not just the nuts and bolts of slamming clay together, but how to give it a better elevation, for instance, some of those other things. Is that a natural eye? Is it something you've learned? Is it being an artist?
I think it's being an artist. I think it's being a human. I think creativity emerges from problems. It's a problem-solving thing. When there is a problem with somebody's difficulty in creating a piece, not everybody's hands are built the same. You know, some person might have difficulty with one technique over another. I have to figure that out. That's a creative process in my brain in order to teach it better. If there's a problem with the clay itself, let's say I have a friend who retired 2 years ago, and as a gift I gave her, come to the studio for classes. And she wanted to make a bird bath. After 2 years outside, and she did bring it in the winter, the bird breath cracked.
Oops.
And so my job now, because she asked me, can you fix it? No, you really can't. But I think I can make it work again. And I had to actually break it apart in order to put it back together. And right now, I feel real confident it will hold water, but but I can see the crack, and now I'm going to fix that.
And
I don't know how yet, but I have to figure it out. That's creativity. We all face life problems where we have to see what's wrong, see how do we make it better or more fun.
Or prettier.
Or prettier. Oh, absolutely prettier.
Well, thanks so much, Julie Schilf, who is a well-known potter here in Kenosha, and thanks for joining us here at Lemon Street. We're going to continue our tour just around the corner, so I'm going to scoot this way. And as you can see, there's a lot of twisties and turns in Lemon Street Gallery, and that's what's nice. Every time you turn a corner, there's something else that's cool. And we're going to be talking with Tim now about his paintings. Hi, Tim.
Hi, Jane.
You know, one of the things I neglected to do right before we started our interview is to make sure I know how to pronounce your last name. So can you do that for me?
Sure, Roz Wadowski.
Well, I would have guessed right, surprisingly.
You got to go syllable by syllable.
Yeah, and it actually looks like it's spelled. So welcome to the program today.
Thanks.
You're a painter, and why don't you show us a little bit of your work and tell us, I guess, how you describe your style of painting.
I think I'm kind of impressionistic. I use water, reducible oils, and I kind of accumulate ideas in my brain. A lot of my paintings actually come from my brain rather than from reality. I think I have a good memory of color. I sold paint most of my life and mixed colors. You know, years ago you didn't have computers to tell you how to mix a paint color. You yes. would do it yourself based on your own knowledge of color. And that's helped me become the painter that I am. I'm also very visual, so I like shapes, and I use those shapes in my paintings. So
I see some rural landscapes. I see three women, not even head and shoulders, pretty much just their portrait. Mm-hmm. And then I see a cityscape. And did you use the same types of paint, the watered oils, for each one?
That's all I use, yes. And I generally paint on panels because I like the rigidity of the panels as opposed to a canvas, which I find. When we paint, we make decisions in our life. And, you know, I can't afford bigger canvases. And, you know, I'm on a fixed income at my age. And so I use panels, but they're not cheap panels. They're linen-coated panels. And they hold the paint very well, and I'm very comfortable with them.
So I'm totally ignorant about that. I guess I just assumed everybody painted on canvas that was fairly flexible. So is this sold in an artist's supply store? So it is specifically
yes,
for this purpose.
These portraits are all done, I think, on these two are done on gesso boards. So it's a Masonite material, and there's a primer that painters use to coat the surface. You can do that yourself. I'd rather paint than do a lot of preparation. So, when you use these, you get a kind of a smooth look, and you see more brush strokes, I think. On a linen canvas, which is attached to cardboard, you still see some of the texture of the linen, you know, and which you would see in this painting as well. I think these are on linen boards as well, or linen, you know, cardboard. So
I would assume you have to paint, for instance, with the rural scenes, that you have to start with the background, correct?
Well, I've been trained by myself and through local artists. I have taken classes in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, and Cudahy with local artists who teach as well as paint. And I do like the classical method of painting, and that is you start with your darks and end up with your lights. So you would put the dark, you know, green in here first, and then you would shape the paintings.
Which is interesting, because what you're telling me then, because that would be the shadow that's supposed to be cast by the trees in this particular painting. So you start with this dark green, And, you know, to be honest, that's nothing. It's not a tree. It's a shade. So I guess what I'm trying to get at is, do you have to have the entire piece visualized first?
Well, the process would be is that I observe, whether it be another painting or a photograph that I use as a reference. And I observe it and study it, and then I prepare the canvas. And when I prepare the canvas, I usually put a tone down. It would be either a red tone or a gray tone, and that would become my mid-tone. And then you would kind of sketch out with either black or red the painting that you want to do. And then you shape the darks in, and then you go to the mid-tones, which are already there because you've toned the canvas, and then you bring in your lights at the end.
Very interesting. Because what you're the way you describe it, I would think it would be very, you had talked, and remember this is both video and it's audio, so the people unfortunately are at a disadvantage who are just listening to the audio. It's very clear that those are trees. It's not so abstract. And sheep, it's pretty hard to, you know, it's a sheep. It's a sheep.
I think more impressionistic than abstract, you know. And,
that's true.
I think even with my portraits, they're not, you know.
You have a lot of shading, but it's definitely a person or a sheep
or a
tree.
It is.
Yes, it's not a cube.
That's good.
So you were talking about the artistic growth, and you mentioned some of the people you've worked with to increase your knowledge base. But before we started talking officially here, you were telling me that you have some artist friends. That sounded pretty cool.
Yep. We started a group in Milwaukee, in Wauwatosa, and we call ourselves...
You're from there, correct?
I'm originally from Milwaukee, yes. I've been in Kenosha for 2 years. And so there's a group of five artists. We call ourselves the Group of Five, and we go to galleries together, and we get together, you know, probably about twice a month, and we talk about art and argue about art and, you know, the process of art. And everybody's kind of got a different perspective, and so it's very interesting. And I think I was telling you before, I was kind of the black sheep of the group because I kind of challenge my friends quite often and, you know, and make it a lively discussion. So
how can you argue about art? Don't you just say,
well, even words, but even words like process or methods, you know, they're all different. I think I overheard the conversation with Julie, you know, and you keep learning things, things keep changing. So, you know, and all the artists that I know that are in this group were in our 60s or 70s. I'm 71 years old, you know, so you still learn things all the time. And
so how did you, I guess, get started with painting? Have you been doing it for 10 years, 20 years?
I retired from Sherwin-Williams Paint Company in 2014. At that point, I decided that I always wanted to be an artist, so I devoted myself to setting up a studio in my home and started dabbling with oil paints, which I was comfortable with in the past. So, and then I, you know, talked to some other artists and they encouraged me to do more, and I'm fairly prolific. I probably do, I'm saying, 3 paintings a week.
Oh, that's quite
so,
a bit.
I have a website that I've launched, and the first series I had 85 paintings, and I just had second photographing of my work, and I had 60 more paintings that I did in the last 2 months.
And what about the subjects? I mean, coming up with that many subjects would be...
Well, I have a studio at Kemper here in Kenosha, and so now I'm working on landscapes. I use the... we have great windows in our studios, and so I'm doing some series of clouds, and I'm not quite yet doing Lake Michigan, but that's probably next on the horizon, you know. My studio faces south, so the Anderson Center.
Oh, sure.
So, but the great clouds to paint, and I enjoy doing that.
Oh, yeah, and this week there have been incredible clouds.
I left the studio a couple of days ago, and the night glow of the clouds was just amazing.
It probably was, turned around, ran back.
I thought about it, but I was tired, like 9:30 at the time.
Yeah, no, then Well, I just think it's fascinating how you can create something from the color blocks, and that you've really, you know, basically you've taken this up fairly late in life.
Yeah, so. And what I do is, you know, I generally work small. You know, these paintings are 6x6. I mm-hmm. have somebody who sells me the frames, and I sell the paintings with the frames. And I try to make them reasonable. My website says, you know, art should be affordable. So I try to pay for my expenses by selling my art and keep it reasonable. So I generally work on 6x6 sizes, 11x14, 12x16. I think this is 12x16. Not much bigger than that.
If somebody, the things that are quite manageable.
Yeah, yeah, and that's why. And then I can do more as well. I don't like to spend a lot of time on a painting. It's my ADHD personality.
Well, thanks, Tim. This is, it's been fascinating. Really do appreciate you spending the time with us. We're going to continue our tour just around the corner, and we're going to finish our program today with talking with Beth some more about the gallery, but specifically about this area which that the gallery is located in, and that is the, I'm trying to figure out the best place to stand. I think this might work. And we're in the Union Park Arts District. And can you tell me what that is?
Yes. So we adopted, Lemon Street Gallery adopted Union Park, which is considered a mini city park, several years ago. And we have written grants to work with the neighbors to really have everybody in the neighborhood buy into the beautification of this park and of this neighborhood. And we're very pleased that we now have had the very first public sculpture in Union Park. We have worked with the residents to make mosaic planters that line every corner. We have a little free library, and very, very soon we will be launching the very first little free art gallery.
And we have to grab a picture of that before we go. I'm going to make these camera people, so let's go, because I just think that's very cool. So tell me more, though. It's not just Lemon Street Gallery, right?
Correct. So we have other businesses in the neighborhood that are also art-friendly, and they have, along with Lemon Street Gallery, we are co-hosting an original art market this summer. And we had it obviously in 2019, 2020 was 2020. And so
it sure
it was. Didn't happen. And we will be holding an art market again this summer, July through October, third Sunday of the month from 10 to 2.
And I'm going to ask you more about that, but we have made our way over to the Little Lemon Street Gallery, and this is just so cool. So what's the concept behind it?
So the concept behind the Little Street Gallery.
Let me back in. Hopefully you can still get audio. And
the idea behind the Little Lemon Street Gallery is very similar to what you may have seen, the little free libraries, where you take a book, leave a book. And with the little free gallery, you take a miniature piece of art and you leave you take one and you leave one. So it is the same kind of concept. And it was a collaborative effort between Missy Isaac Poltrock was kind of the spearhead of this project.
And she's a member of the gallery.
She is a member of the gallery. And Mike Latuski and Stephen Hovey, they all worked together to do the finishing of a little free library that my husband had started. And we now have it as the Little Lemon Street Art Gallery.
What I think is interesting, because if you just tell somebody, oh, somebody's going to put a piece of art in there and take a piece of art, well, you have to be an artist, right? But what's interesting, I think, about this neighborhood is an amazing number of artists, college professors of art who live around here. And I think you've kind of, I don't want to say done a survey, but what have you found out about the neighborhood?
Well, we've found out about its history and its past and how it was a very modest neighborhood for people who worked in the factories. And I think that we have found lately that there is a big insurgence of people who are very arts-centric. And that may be meaning performing arts, visual arts, having a sense of art appreciation, and that has brought different businesses as well into the area that really support it. It's very common for an arts district to be separated from the downtown area because of gentrification in the downtown area. The rents are higher, things are much more expensive. This is a more affordable area where people can have a studio. It may be a little less traditional than some places, but you will find that we have some great support. We have extreme support from our neighborhood, and it is always a better community with the arts involved.
And getting back to the Kenosha Art Market, again, the third Sunday of each month, July through October, you said?
Correct.
I know 2 years ago when you started it, you did see the neighborhood come out in droves.
Absolutely. And also bringing an awareness from the outside of the neighborhood to the Arts District and all of the possibilities and potential that it has. We have live music during the art market. It is all original art. It is not pattern-based. It's not fair trade, which there are absolutely perfectly good outlets for those things. And this is a way for a lot of people to really recognize how the economic impact is to the arts in the community.
So we've talked with three wonderful artists. I know you said, 70-some artists right now?
We represent about 75 different artists, and that can kind of fluctuate throughout the years. And we have seen just an amazing amount of talent come through our doors. Most of our artists are Kenosha County, Racine County, Lake County, so we're very regional, and we really pride ourselves on being able to find some of the very best talent here for people.
So what about your clientele? Who do you draw from? Who do you see coming through? And I know it's been a year because we're dealing with COVID, but
well,
in general,
it is very divided, I would have to tell you. We have a lot of first-time visitors that come up from the Chicago area, which is always kind of surprising to me, but I think they feel like they're coming up and going slumming, and they find that they just fall in love with Kenosha because it is an amazing place. And I also regularly we see those people that say, you know, I've driven past this place a million times. And I always tell them, if I had a nickel for every time I heard that, I would be rolling in nickels. So it is a variety, and we have definitely some people that are very committed clientele that return, you know, every time we have a new exhibit, and they're very good patrons of the arts. And we have those people that are just really coming in for the first time. They may feel like they're intimidated to go to a museum or an art gallery. We are a very comfortable, very accommodating place. And one of our major ideas is to be able to get eye in the art of the everyday person. And so they can go to that museum, they can go to that gallery and have an opinion that matters about art. And, you know, too many people feel that because they don't know much, they can't have a good opinion, and that we want to dispel.
Well, thank you so much. We have been talking with Beth Derry, who is the director of the Lemon Street Gallery, and I really want to thank our artists. And it's hard sometimes to talk about what you do, and we found three people who are very passionate about their art and have been able to do an excellent job of explaining it. And I'm Jane Herring for Community Matters.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.